So he's got money. He just lives like a vagrant because he is, as you mentioned, kind of Erica going slowly insane, probably caused by his interactions with Armand. I mean, it wouldn't be a real calm feeling to know that a vampire was regularly stalking you all over the world, no matter where you went.
That would be a wish come true for me.
Joanne's like, oh no, I seem to have tripped and fallen. I guess you're going to catch me. Greetings, savory inferiors, and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast of the Immortal Universe, including AMC's series Interview with the Vampire and The Mayfair Witches. With both shows in hiatus, co-hosts Christina LaRusso, Joanne Palumbo, and myself, Mark Snedeker, are engaging in discussions of vampire lore and the supernatural, as well as diving deeper into the shows and Anne Rice's library. This week, we welcome back Erica Robert Palo. You may remember her as a guest on an earlier episode where Erica brought her considerable expertise discussing Claudia's diaries as a narrative tool. Today, in part one of a two-part episode, she will be sharing her thoughts and theories about Armand and Daniel and their relationship. We also speculate about the differences between the books and the show and how the timelines might line up. And now I'd like to greet my co-hosts. Hello, Christina LaRusso. Hello, Joanne Palumbo.
Hi, Mark Snedeker. Hi, Christina.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Erica. It's so nice to finally be on an episode with you. I missed you last time, so I'm really looking forward to this tonight.
I know. It's so good to actually talk live with you and not just get to hear you in my earbuds as I listen to you talk on the podcast.
Erica, for those who didn't get a chance to hear you on the previous episode, and I'll have that linked in the episode notes, would you share a little bit about your background with listeners?
I am currently a library assistant at Harvard. I'm a researcher. I'm very interested in gender, literature, and I also, for over a decade, was in the film industry, photography. I've done pretty much everything there is to do on a film set. And so I combine all of those loves around Anne Rice because I've been a fan of all of her books, specifically The Vampire Chronicles, since the late 90s. So when the show came out, I've just become even more obsessed than I already was.
This is really going to be an episode about Armand and Daniel. So as Rollin Jones says in the afterword of episode 7, and this is me quoting him, for those of you who haven't read the book, this, meaning Armand, is a big character. He is the leader of a vampire coven. He's an extremely powerful vampire. So for us discussing this, in spite of the fact that Armand was hiding in plain sight throughout the entirety of the first season, we as viewers really know very little of who he is at this point and what in the hell is going on with him, Louis, and Daniel. And that's what I really want to get into in this episode. So all along through the first season, we've been led to believe one thing, but the reality is something very different. And so the four of us are going to be engaging in some speculation about what that reality might be. And that's going to probably lead to speculation about what we might see in season two and sort of the nature of memory and our experience as an audience watching this and having this kind of this trick that was played on us.
Right. Because if it's crazy to think back to, you know, the early episodes where we're just kind of like, yeah, I wonder what this Rashid guy is. Maybe he's, and we, some people were just like, we think he's just like random vampire number one or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he could have been Rashid the vampire. He could, but a lot of people clocked him as Armand. I, of course, had the elaborate theory that he was post-body thief David.
Yeah.
I'm bitter that that wasn't right. But anyway, a lot of people clocked him as Armand.
By the end of episode one, I was seriously considering it. I think by episode two, when we are starting to just see him move around a little bit more in general. Also, I think for me, the thing that really clicked for me was when Daniel's looking at the painting by Marius and just the way that that Armand Rashid talked about it. I just knew. He just seemed like, you know, slightly aged up because obviously in the books he's 17. Thankfully he's not in the show, but it was the painting. It was the general just sort of demeanor, because one thing that's continuously repeated in the books is how you cannot read Armand's face. His expressions are not obvious. And to me, that was actually the subtle acting of Asad that I thought clued me in, to be honest with you. It was just his demeanor. And so, yeah, I was pretty set on it by definitely episode two.
I thought that we should look at three things. One is Armand and Daniel's relationship, because I think that a lot of the theories, Erica, that you've shared are extensions of what we know happens in the book versus the show, because the way things are in the show, it's hard for me to imagine that the things in the book that happened.
They have some work to do.
And then I want to talk about the Night Island. And when we talk about the Night Island, Erica, you have a great and interesting theory about Night Island. But then we also know that Night Island is going to be a new series, so we can talk a little bit about that. And then the final thing I want to talk about, bring it back to the show and talk about, why is this interview happening? And what, if any, role does Armand play in that? Let's start with Armand and Daniel and their relationship. And Erica, do you want to talk a little bit about their relationship in the book?
Yeah. So in the book, and we are talking here about Queen of the Damned, in part one, chapter four, there is a chapter called The Story of Daniel, the Devil's Minion, or The Boy from Interview with the Vampire, which is just a great title. Most of us, I think, who are fans of this, just shorten this to say The Devil's Minion, Devil's Minion or The Devil's Minion chapter. What this is, in a nutshell, is a point of view from both Daniel and Armand of their life together. After the interview happened with Louis, again, this is in the book, so it is already a little different in the show, but in the books, Daniel gets in a car and drives to New Orleans to hunt for Lestat. He does not find him, but he is found by Armand. After that, Armand basically starts hunting Daniel, but he tells him he's going to do this. So it goes for about 4 years of basically Armand stalking Daniel. And then, but it is stalking, but he also sits down and talks to him and buys him dinner and hangs out. And then after about 4 years, it becomes romantic. Essentially, Armand says, do you want to do this? And not so many words. And Daniel says, yes. And Armand gives him a vial of his blood that Daniel wears around his neck for another 4 years. They're together for about 8 years. And that is their relationship. But it's a really insane, crazy, toxic, crazy thing. I mean, we think that Louis and Lestat's relationship is toxic. This one is pretty insane, but it's also incredibly codependent. Daniel both absolutely loves him and is absolutely descending into madness, true madness. He drinks Armand's blood on a regular basis and Armand drinks his. It is basically about 4 years of them exchanging blood and running all over the world together and having absolute crazy times.
So one of the things that I want to highlight about that relationship is that Armand, and this was true of Armand with Louis as well in the book, and I want to see how much this plays out in the series. Armand uses Louis first, and then he uses Daniel as like an anchor to the time in which he's living. Armand has a difficulty, at least at first, of like getting roots in a time. And so a lot of times what's happening in the Devil's Minion chapter is he's showing up and he's like, wake up, Daniel, explain to me what this means. Why do men like to go to war? And
what is the deal with this rock and roll music?
Yeah. He's kind of looking to Daniel to explain things to him. Here's a question for you, Erica. Do you believe that is real? That Armand doesn't get it?
I genuinely think he is at a loss in every century that he finds himself in. From the time that Armand's coven is destroyed in Paris, from Lestat going there and exposing them. And that's something we will see in season two to some extent. It's a different time frame from the books, but Armand was very comfortable in his little dark, evil, satanic shell under the cemetery. And when that was destroyed, I genuinely think he just didn't know what to do and where to go. So I actually agree that he is looking to these guys for help in essentially bringing him up to date. You know, anytime we see movies or television shows where somebody has been frozen in time or time traveled or whatnot, I think that it is a believable thing to assume that he would need somebody to sort of hold him anchored, as you said, to what's going on.
He's essentially a tour guide for him of the keeping up with the times, right? This is a microwave. This is how it works, you know, in terms of like the 2022 or, you know, getting into this time frame, right?
Yeah. And he's very, Armand's very fascinated by the time, but he really just doesn't quite get it. Is my impression, right? He just doesn't understand. And maybe he, like you said, maybe he never did. I mean, how much are you going to understand of the century he was born in when he was in a monastery and then a brothel, right? That doesn't give you a really broad base with which to understand the times. And I know vampires in general in this universe struggle with the march of time. They're not plugged into humanity, obviously, and that's really what determines history. They're worried about vampire shit.
And I definitely agree with both of that, too. It's not just that Armand is, hey, I discovered blenders, or I love planes now, or I found a sunken ship under the sea. We're going to bring it up and I'm going to make millions off of it. And I want to know what that means. Like, I mean, that is absolutely what he's using Daniel for. But even more so, and he did this with Louis, too, but especially with Daniel, he's always asking him philosophical questions. He talks to him. They in the chapter, they go on and on about going to every museum, going to the opera, going to plays, listening to musicians at their houses. But, you know, these deeper existential kinds of questions, but related to the time that they're in. It's not like Armand is asking Daniel questions about the past. In fact, it's the reverse. Daniel repeatedly keeps asking Armand, what was it like in the Renaissance? Mm-hmm. What was Italy like in these eras? And Armand is, oh, you mean that people were dying, that their breath smelled, that we slept 10 to a small room? You know, what do you want me to say? And so, you know, and Daniel's like, well, I don't know anything. So I think Armand really wants to understand the mentality of what modern day people are thinking. And in this chapter, at least the chapter in the book anyway, takes place in the 70s and the 80s. We'll see what that means for the show. But yeah.
So you bring up one point there that I find to be super interesting about one of the things that Armand says to Daniel, because you're right. Daniel will ask him questions and he doesn't want to or he can't. And I really feel like it's more he can't, because it's just sort of like that was just how I lived my life, right? Like, it's just, it doesn't seem remarkable to him because it's not history to him. It's his lived experience. The one thing he does say that I think is so integral to his character, to his identity, is today it is so lonely. When we lived in the Renaissance, we slept 7 to a room. But today, it is so lonely. Even when he was in the coven, at least he was with a group of vampires. You know, he wasn't alone then. I think those were happy times, being a Satan worshiping under the cemetery dwelling.
Yeah, 5 stars.
Vampire hobo.
5 stars. Would stay there again.
He really would.
Those were some of the happiest times of my life when I was a cave dwelling devil worshiper. Yeah, totally. I could get it.
I'm kind of 2 minds as to why Armand can't or won't answer that question. One reason may just be he doesn't want to talk about it, right? That's not where his interests lie. And then, of course, there's that vampire tendency to really not be of the times. But so Christine and I watched an interesting movie, just a quick sideline here. It's called The Man from Earth, I think is what it was called. Yeah. And this was a guy who'd been alive for like 13, 14,000 years. And they kept asking him history questions. And he was like, look, I was just one guy kind of moving through my life. And there were no newspapers, you know, back then. They had, you know, someone in the Middle Ages, for example, would have very little idea of what was going on in the rest of the world. They're more concerned with, you know, getting the shit off their feet or whatever it is, or, you know, which lord is going to come and collect taxes from them. And I think we overestimate how aware people in those times would be of the historical, you know, sense of them. You know, I just don't know that people are that good at characterizing their time while they're in it.
You can just say, this is what I did. This was my experience, but you can't really express more than this is what it was like for me.
I think there's also an element of fear and constant worrying about dying. And yeah. I know as a human, that's something that we all have. But I think in the past, people were much more aware of the fact that if I stubbed my toe and I broke the skin, I don't understand what infection means, but I know that if something happens, I could die from that, you know, very easily. You know, people lived to be much younger of an age before when they died because life was just, I don't know if fragile is the right word, but I just feel like it's more
immediate. It was dangerous. Yeah.
It is dangerous, but it was what's right in front of you. And so I think with Armand, he's looking at what's right in front of him. And his time with Marius was definitely the highlight, I think. But then he was also kidnapped twice, you know, on as bookends from his time with Marius. So Armand tends to be a bit of a fatalist. So I think that he's probably going to be focusing on what went wrong and what was crap versus the fact that he was surrounded by magnificent art and murals being painted and that he had this immense talent. To him, that he himself was a painter. I just think that he, because he's reflecting back, kind of to this point that you both are bringing up, is that when you reflect back, it's these punctuation marks, I think, that we remember, good and bad, but we don't necessarily remember the day-to-day stuff. It's either, you know, I almost died because a lion escaped and was chasing me, or I met the love of my life and I was in a dreamland for a full year. You know, it's these big, giant things that I think are more likely to be remembered, which is why I think when we record history, we record the big stuff and not usually the day-to-day stuff. And that's why we record royalty versus general everyday people, you know? And so I think for Armand, he's just going, Daniel, who cares? You know, and he wants to look forward because I think after his coven was destroyed, I think Armand was really like, I'm done. I'm done. I'm going to go into the fire or whatever. And I think he didn't, but he's always looking for that excuse. And he does look for a really good excuse later in some later books. He's always sort of on the edge of finding a reason to not go on.
Yeah, he had a lot of rough things happen to him in his life. So let's talk a little bit about Daniel in the book. He's quite different from what he's like in the series.
Daniel in the book meets Armand actually at around 17. In the show, he is 20. And in fact, that is named. Older Daniel does say that eventually. They meet in 1973. According to the book, they're together until about 1981. Daniel is accurate with the show in that he is lost. He is trying to come up with a career. He is interested in journalism and that he is doing these interviews with random people, not necessarily vampires. And he's down on his luck in general. But in the book, he really does go after a story, and that was Lestat. When he doesn't find Lestat and Armand finds him, it kind of gets reversed. Daniel becomes the story, and he is just wandering. Armand essentially says, run. And if I don't kill you, it's because I found you interesting. So Daniel just wanders and really starts to become aimless. He had much more focus earlier on, and then all of a sudden he just doesn't really know what he's doing anymore. When the two of them get together, especially when blood starts getting exchanged, Daniel really starts going into some madness and confusion, and he starts having hallucinations. He also starts to become a real alcoholic. In the show, they focus more on the fact that he was a heroin user. They clearly don't seem to emphasize that he was an alcoholic because Daniel drinks quite a lot in the show. So from the book, it's implied more that he is only an alcoholic, that he does not do any kind of drugs, at least not as an addict. It's implied that he maybe does them for fun and recreation, but essentially Armand's blood is what becomes his drug. Daniel was absolutely addicted to the blood in the books, and he is very self-aware of this. There's a lot in the books where he is reflecting back on his life since the time he met Armand and got anywhere near him. And he's definitely aware that he is struggling and that he is descending into madness. He's also aware that it is through the blood. And I will read just a few lines here. This is Daniel. The blood connected them. It had to. The precious tiny drinks of burning preternatural blood. I know you guys like that word.
Well, Anne Rice certainly does.
She sure does.
Never enough to do more than awaken dreams in Daniel and the thirst for eternity, to make the flowers and the wallpaper sing and dance. Whatever Armand could always find him, of that he had no doubt. And then later he talks about the actual experience of that. Daniel felt the sharp teeth pierce the surface of his skin, sudden pain and throbbing warmth. Are you killing me, finally? He grew drowsy, on fire, filled with love. Do it, yes. But Armand had only taken a few droplets. He would release Daniel and press gently on his shoulders, forcing Daniel down on his knees. Daniel had looked up to see the blood flowing from Armand's wrists. Great electric shocks had passed through Daniel at the taste of that blood. It had seemed in a flash that the city of Pompeii was full of whispering, of crying, some vague and pulsing imprint of long-ago suffering and death. Thousands perishing in smoke and ash, thousands dying together, together. Daniel had clung to Armand, but the blood was gone. Only a taste, no more. You are mine, beautiful boy, Armand had said. Later on, it gets to the point where he's completely losing it. Armand actually says to him, you weigh no more than 130 pounds now. Does that ring a bell, anybody?
Yes, it does. Yep. Thank you.
Rashid apparently only weighs 130 pounds, mm-hmm. according to Louis. Anyway, I digress. He's saying this, Armand is saying this about Daniel. And the alcohol is eating at your insides. You are half mad. There is almost nothing left in the world that you enjoy. If you never see me again, that would only make things worse. If you go on as you are, you won't live another 5 days. There is nothing I can do to make you want to live. Isn't that so? So it's bad, obviously. And as Christina, as you said, he does turn Daniel. Actually, after that little speech is when he turns him, because essentially the choice is Daniel's going to die as a human, or he's going to die and be reborn as a vampire. So there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of Daniel also, aside from the blood, there's a lot of Daniel who steps back and looks at vampires in general as a whole, and he wants it. He wants that life. He wants everything that comes with it. You know, he thinks about the fact of what that's going to actually mean in terms of he's going to have to be drinking blood and killing people. But he reflects on that and he decides, yeah, you know what? I'm good with that.
I know people like that.
I can totally relate to Daniel in that sense. He is me and I am him.
Yeah, I mean, he says repeatedly to Armand over all these years, make me a vampire. I want this. I know what it means. I want to live forever. There's an early passage where Daniel says, what had he wanted in those early weeks? Did he hope to possess the splendid secrets of life itself? Surely he would gain from this knowledge no purpose for an existence already fraught with disappointment. No, he wanted to be swept away from everything he had once loved. He longed for Louis's violent and sensuous world, evil. He was no longer afraid. If they would only let him in, maybe he just wanted to live forever. Could anyone fault him for that? And he said, I want it. I want to live forever. Daniel had sat up, climbed to his feet slowly, struggling to see Armand more clearly. I want to be with Louis and with you. And I flagged that because I just think that's a tie-in, an interesting potential tie into the show, where we do have this canon in the books where at least Daniel is definitely saying, I want to be with the two of you. Now, he may not have necessarily meant romantically as a threesome, but maybe he did.
This is Daniel.
Daniel had a lot of threesomes in the book.
Well, and Armand likes to watch. At this point in the books, at least, they can't. They can't have sex. So their sex is the exchange of blood. But he likes to watch him being with other people.
He procures them for Daniel and then sits back and watches Daniel have sex with all these men and women. But the thing of it is Daniel actually gets pretty pissed off about it because it feels very...
You know what that reminds me of?
Friday night?
Do you remember... Touché, Mark. That's my typical Tuesday, honey. You don't want to know what goes on
I probably don't.
No, you don't. You don't. But remember when Lestat, in a sense, procured Lily for Louis?
Yep.
And they made a comment about him just wanting to watch. And I mean, he did eventually, you know, kind of join in. But he did start out just kind of watching them. And when you were just describing that to me, that's what flashed into my mind is that image of Lestat watching Lily and Louis together.
Yeah, that's what vampires do, right? They watch humanity more than they participate in it, right?
Daniel, to me, is, in the books, a really complex character. His desire for immortality... As is the case, I really think, like, even Louis, okay, we can debate how much choice Louis really had in the matter because, of course, as we know, that Lestat really kind of tricked him, seduced him into it, even in the books. But Daniel really kind of went into it saying, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then when he got it, it wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. It's a tougher, no matter how much you think you know what you're getting into. And I think Daniel proves this point quite well. You really don't know. And I mean, at a certain point there, Daniel's just becoming obsessed with, you know, he descends into madness. And that's when he goes to live with Marius. But
that's a great role model.
Yeah, Marius, that's another one. Woo, problematic. Okay, so let's talk about Daniel and Armand in the series then. That's a lot different, right? Because in the series, Daniel, number one, never published the books. Number two, as far as we know, and we don't know, and Erica, you've got some speculation about this. We know in the series, we know that they came together in 1973, and Armand says to him, and this is in the episode 7, this time I won't save you if he tries to kill you again. So we know that the thing that stopped Louis from killing Daniel at the first interview was Armand interceding. And Armand has said repeatedly through this interview that he, you know, he helps Louis be a better Louis. He's like, he steps in and stops Louis from being violent when Daniel slaps him. Armand comes in and puts his hand on Louis and calms him down.
Well, that's just his, you know, that's something that murder goblins are really good at, apparently.
Yeah, well, but that could be his special gift.
Yeah.
That could be his way of, you know, he can calm Louis down. And I mean, for heaven's sakes, in the books, Armand, it's explicitly stated that Armand has been this anodyne for Louis to help him not be so sad or have the memories, have the hard, hard memories. He's able to kind of take the edge off of those memories for Louis. And it seems like possibly in the series, he's doing that same thing with Louis. But what do we think? Do we think that they then had this relationship?
I do think that in the show, and this, I cannot take full credit for this. I want to quote Sojo 83, because she had noticed that in the bar scene between Louis, Armand, and Daniel, after Louis says, do you want to join us? We're going to go do this interview. Armand says, no, you go have your fun. If you watch those few blessed frames between them, it actually appears as if Armand and Daniel have met. That is what she talked about, and I completely agree with her. It definitely appears that way, because Armand is not jealous in the sense of sharing his romantic partners in the books anyway. I mean, at the end of all of the books, at the very end, he and Lestat openly talk about the fact that Louis is going back to Lestat and leaving Armand. Like, and Armand's like, I'm happy for you. Like, Armand is not the kind of jealous person in that way. So when I first saw that scene, I thought it had more of a hint of jealousy, which was a little strange because I do feel like I have known Armand's character more than that to question it. And so I think this is a really good insight that it's possible, given the fact that in the show, especially, Daniel has been haunting this bar, supposedly looking for interviews. I would argue that that's maybe half of what he's there for. And maybe he met Armand, because in the books, as I mentioned before, Armand is known for procuring romantic partners. So I would suppose that he's actually procuring those romantic partners for Louis, to maybe the three of them have something, or just so he can watch Louis, you know, do something with a human. So I'm wondering, and then, if Armand and Daniel had met, and maybe he wiped his mind, maybe he did it, who knows? But that's definitely something that I'm now leaning towards, is that they had met. From there, it's definitely something where I believe that in the show, older Daniel has had his mind wiped, or at least very much changed. We do know throughout the books that Armand really is one of the most gifted when it comes to particularly the spell gift and the mind gift. But the spell gift is the one where you really manipulate thoughts. He does it to Lestat heavily in the Vampire Lestat book throughout the books. You know, if somebody needs to have their mind manipulated, you call Armand. So I definitely think that Armand and Daniel, the early parts in the 70s and 80s, had a relationship that lasted for a while. Daniel started to descend into madness. He was addicted to the blood, and Armand refused to give it to him. So I actually think it was Daniel that said, okay, I'm done. Wipe my mind. I can't continue on knowing that you're not going to give this to me and that I'm going to be slowly dying. And again, he brings this up a lot in the books of, you're watching me die and you're not doing anything about it. And it really causes a lot of bitterness there. So I think it was actually Daniel's request to say, give me a clean slate. I need to start over. And I think Armand complied. I think Armand was very sad and resentful towards that. So flash forward, when we're now in Dubai in 2022, I definitely think that, and potentially another reason for the interview, but I think that Armand is really struggling to be in Daniel's presence again because of all the memories that are brought up for him. I then think it's possible that Armand was one of the instigators in bringing this whole interview to pass in the first place, this redo interview, because I think he knows that Daniel is sick, is dying, and he wants to give him one last chance at some fame, some, you know, standing, to bring his career back to him. In the book chapter, Armand is repeatedly rescuing Daniel. I mean, Daniel is on the verge of death quite a few times. He gets put into jail. He's, you know, attacked. Like, there's all these things, and Armand comes in and rescues him. So to me, that's in character, that Armand potentially was saying, let's give Daniel this last hurrah and make him famous. So that's definitely a possibility, because I think Armand wants to give Daniel one last shot at fame before he dies of Parkinson's, which, quick side note, I don't believe that it's full Parkinson's. Maybe it is, but I think this is absolutely something that has been a mutation or some kind of after effect of all the years of drinking vampire blood and being addicted to it. We don't have any real good scientific study of what vampire blood does to humans over time. So I actually think that also potentially Armand feels guilty that he was actually a contributing factor to Daniel now being very sick. And another person's theory that I'm going to talk about here that I full on believe, this is Slash Piper. Slash Piper had mentioned that in the scene where Louis and Daniel and Armand are standing there after Louis had been feeding off of Armand, Armand stands up and, you know, he's not lightheaded or anything like this. Armand actually says off camera, we do not see who he's addressing this to. We assume by what just happened that he's talking about Louis. But Slash Piper, and I fully agree to this now, I think it was Armand talking about Daniel. He says, I care for him more than he cares for himself. I think he's talking about caring for Daniel more than Daniel cares for himself. And I think, again, this is sort of going back to what I think in general of why this is happening is because Armand is partially responsible for wanting to bring Daniel back into the loop and to do all of this, to give him another chance to make some kind of amends. Does he want to give Daniel the blood? No, I don't think so. I do not. I think that's why he was quite shocked when Louis said that. Whether he meant it or not doesn't matter, but I don't think Armand wants to do that. But I definitely think he's making some sad attempt at trying to fix what he did to Daniel's life.
Your theory about the Parkinson's is pretty interesting, and that would be kind of neat if that was the case. And I do remember Christina or Mark, I don't remember if it was last episode or the episode before, where we were talking about, you know, Armand and stuff, and I had said that, what if Armand was behind this whole thing of having Louis redo the interview and everything like that? And in my mind, when I said that, I thought it more of in terms of something for Louis, but I could see, Erica, your point too now, that it could be a way for him to get to Daniel and to make things maybe in his way right for Daniel, whether it's to bring him fame again or to cure him of his Parkinson's slash maybe blood issue that he's having.
Well, I think he could also be doing this for Louis as well. You know, I think I think Armand has a lot to atone for with both of these guys. So I definitely could see it being for both. But I do think there has been Armand in plain sight, quote unquote, hiding from us. And I think that this maybe ties into that, you know, that we've been assuming this whole time of the show that this is about Daniel and Louis, because we're thinking of it from the perspective of Interview with the Vampire, the book, which was between the two of them. But I think it's more complicated than that. And I think part of this is actually, it's also Armand that's involved in trying to get this all together.
Do you think, Mark, maybe this is a question for you, do you think that we will get a three-way sex scene between Armand, yeah,
I think you can,
and Daniel?
I think you can.
Please.
I think you can count on another Eiffel Tower. Yes.
President Day.
Yeah. Well, we had one. Daniel. Yeah, we had one. This will be Eiffel Tower part two.
Part two.
Yes, part two. I think it's interesting that there are going to be a lot of different takes on this show, basically from how you come to the show. Like, you have Erica and Christina, who are very well, like, steeped in the books, right? And are very aware of the lore as it is with the books. And of course, we know that, you know, they definitely take the books very seriously, but clearly not, you know, they're not just doing a literal retelling. I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, you know, I've read about half, or probably not even half, but half of the important books. And Joni, I know you read a couple of them. I think
I've read a couple of the books.
Yeah.
I love the movie, and I have an obsession with vampires.
Right.
So,
I think you're our purist. The TV show is the thing in perspective.
Probably, yeah.
Which really ultimately should be the deciding factor on these things, right?
I mean, I'm pretty pure in a lot of arenas in life, so that's
okay.
Not
really? Shocking. Because that's never been my impression.
No.
So let's talk about make a little bit where, you know, Daniel's memories are starting to come back and we got the cool scene from the 70s.
I have a thought about that.
Well, please,
all right,
share it.
We have the doctor who comes in, he gives Daniel the drugs,
mm-hmm.
his treatment. What if this doctor
is slipping him a Mickey?
Is because here's the thing. He says, Daniel, in the books, Armand's blood is the thing that triggers dreams and weird things,
yeah.
Right? What if there was some kind of something, some kind of medical something that was going on, and this doctor is doing some kind of experimentation? Because we know that there's a farm.
And maybe there's Armand blood in what he's given him.
Maybe there's some Armand blood. Maybe there's some sort of something that they're giving him. They're not making him full vampire, but maybe that blood, it obviously does something. And remember, that's the scene when Daniel falls asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And Armand says that thing in Latin. Turbulent things are always thus.
Yes.
Erica, you and I have gone back and forth on Twitter about what we think that translation is. But wouldn't it be interesting? It's just a theory. It's obviously I have no basis in fact for this, but just having this conversation has made me think, wouldn't it be interesting if that's actually him saying, you know, my blood, this has always been this way with him.
Yeah.
And that's when he has that dream. He has the memory. It reawakens the memory of him seeing Armand in 1973.
Right, where they've clearly just come from like a Led Zeppelin concert or something.
That was one of the thoughts that I had after reading Erica's theories. I thought to myself, I wonder if there is something to do with Armand's blood reawake. Because how is he suddenly, or is Armand's, is Armand planting that memory for him or reawakening that memory for him in that dream?
I love that, Christina. I think that is absolutely great. Regardless of whether the exact translation for the Latin is whatever it is, the feeling that we're supposed to get about it is that Daniel is troubled, whether he's the cause of trouble or he is, you know, other people are worried that he's in trouble. I think he is just potentially, he's never left that state that he was in when Armand left him to some extent. I mean, even if I'm correct to say that he wiped his memories so that Daniel would forget about Armand so that he could, you know, start his life again and like go about with humans, there was sort of always something there about that. I was thinking about how the fact that the two of them are together, maybe that also instigated certain things for Daniel as to where he would go next. We know that Daniel was already interested in journalism when he meets Armand and Louis, but he wanders and he travels the world and he meets all these amazing people. And I would imagine that he comes across some pretty interesting characters in those years that he's with Armand. So if his mind is wiped of the memories of the two of them, it seems logical that he might still remember things that, you know, going back to this idea of what are the punctuation marks that we remember from our pasts. And I would think that Daniel might remember certain people, and then he reaches out and he gets this exclusive interview, or he writes this hard-hitting book, and then he, you know, launches into his career. So I would say that there's a lot of residual stuff that's hanging in Daniel's memory, regardless of whether he understands what it's from or what certain lived experiences were of. I also would point out, but in the books, Daniel is actually quite unique anyway as a human. He is having dreams about the redheaded twins, which, mm-hmm. you know, go on to be essentially the new queen of the damned. Makare becomes the new queen of the damned when Akasha is killed. And Maharet is this incredibly powerful, amazing, you know, vampire. So Daniel actually dreams of the two of them. And he has these premonitions that there's going to be danger. He sees their life when they were still human, and then they get turned into vampires. He also has premonitions about Lestat's concert going really, really wrong, which it's true. It does happen in the books that way.
So, by the way, we all saw that coming. Nobody thought that was going to go great.
Even Lestat.
Yeah, Lestat's like, you know what? I'm just going to fuck shit up. We're going to see what happens. So, Joanne, just watching that scene where Daniel's memories start bubbling up, and then we got that scene from the 70s, which is so groovy. Tell me how that struck you while you're watching it. Did it seem like real memories coming back? Do you think it's just triggered by him talking to these guys again? What do you think?
Well, initially, I thought it was just a memory coming back. And I thought it was just kind of triggered because he's starting to remember. But then I started reading things on Twitter about how Armand has the ability to control minds and memories. And I kind of thought, okay, well, maybe Armand is awakening that memory that either he suppressed in Daniel or somehow... I don't think Daniel would be capable. I don't think a human would be capable of suppressing a decade or however long they were together of their life, right? Like, you would notice you don't remember something that massive. So I think Armand played with his memories and is now starting to bring them through. And after hearing Erica's theories and reading the information that she sent us, I really think that that's the case, that Armand is bringing those memories back, that when the doctor was there, that he kind of coaxed those memories in. And one of the things, Erica, I found really fascinating was your point about the screensaver, how maybe that's a place that, because it's a weird screensaver, right? And we could never really, I mean, we figured out what it was, I think. And
yeah,
we could never, like,
it's a loading
say
dock,
why
yeah.
he would have such an odd thing as a screensaver. And I liked Erica's kind of speculation that maybe it's a place that he went with other men where, you know, Armand was watching and he just didn't remember it. But for some reason, his subconscious knew that that spot had meaning to him.
Absolutely. That's great. I mean, it's actually a loading dock in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's a historic building along the river there.
And what a random thing to have a screensaver of. So it would make sense that there might be something to it. Now, maybe we'll learn later on that. I think one of the theories I had about it was, maybe it was like, or one of us did, it was one of the places like Daniel last used drugs. It looks like a good place to go and, you know, shoot heroin.
Definitely looked like a great place for that.
So maybe that, to me, that's what I thought. But then I had thought to myself, why would you want to look at it? But again, you pointed out that he does seem like the type of kind of like a sadist who would want that sort of thing in their face all the time.
Yeah, as a reminder of like, look how low you are.
Right. But I really like your theory that it was a place that he went to with Armand. And, you know, because that kind of is a nod to tying everything in about these memories starting to come back. And very interesting.
Well, and remember that that's 2022, the screensaver. But they were there 40, 50 years ago. So, I mean, when I did a deep dive into the history of the actual place, it was still functioning and rather thriving in the 50s. So by the time they would have gotten there, it would have been the 70s, maybe 80s. So it was probably not great, but it may not have looked quite like that. And to your point about, you know, Daniel being, I mean, he's quite a masochist in a lot of levels, and he very much could be remembering the place, but not knowing why. And
not knowing why it has
photo,
significance to it. Yeah,
exactly. And when he finds a photo of it, it looks run down and, you know, sad. And that sort of fits, I feel like that fits Daniel's sort of, well, yeah, this place I remember, I don't know why. It was probably because I was shooting heroin in there, when maybe it was actually more positive than that. Maybe it was actually a really good time for him and multiple people, you know. So, and to your point, too, I think about, you said something of, you're not quite sure if, you know, all these memories can be erased necessarily from Daniel's memory. I agree. I don't necessarily think they were erased like, you know, cut and paste, but this leads me into another sort of theory.
No, I meant more like he couldn't have just forgot. Like, you know, you can't forget a whole entire, you know, 10 years of your life. I mean, maybe you could if you have some sort of issues. That's why I'm saying I think Armand kind of did whatever, you know, voodoo magic on him, vampire trick, and suppressed those memories and replaced them with something else. But for Daniel, for being a drug addict, there would be huge pockets of time that he wouldn't remember. So to him, it might not seem odd to not remember where he was in, you know, the summer of 73, but it's got to strike him as odd that he knew he met Louis in that bar. He had that memory as Daniel in 2022, and now he's seeing a new version of it. So it's like, it's almost like he didn't take away his memories. He just altered them and removed himself out of them in a way.
I agree. But I also, and this is where this could be me going too far with
no such thing.
My theories. Excellent. Because I'm going to go there. I think it's very possible that quote unquote Alice, his first wife, was actually Armand.
I read that you thought that, and I love that theory. Could you imagine?
Okay, so that's where we're going to stop with a cliffhanger. Come back next week to hear the rest of Erica's theories and our conversation about them. Erica, once again, this has been so fascinating to have you on. Before we go, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you on social media?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Slay Sweet. That is SLAWSWEEET, three E's. And my real life persona, Erica Robert Palo on Instagram, ERICARobertPallo, Erica Robert Palo. And that is also what my website and everything else is mostly my full name. So Slay Sweet and Erica Robert Palo. I also have a fan fiction called The Vampire Gabrielle, who was and is, in my mind, Lestat's mother and first fledgling. I have that on AO3, and it's under Slay Sweet, same spelling as my Twitter.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming and joining us. I hope that you had a good time. We love, always love talking with you. And Joe, do you want to take us out?
I hope you guys had a great time tonight. And if you enjoyed us, please follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at @Vampire_Insider and on Facebook and Reddit, Vampire Insider. You can also follow Mark on his personal account at Mark Eats Peace. And Christina is at Christina Jen X. Thank you guys and have a great night. Good night, Mark. Good night, Christina. Good night, Erica.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Bye. Bye.